Good morning. It's good to see all of you. If you have your Bible, grab it and make your way to Genesis chapter 1. Now, if you don't have a Bible, there should be one around you somewhere. I encourage you to grab that and make your way to Genesis 1, first book of the Bible. Should be pretty easy to find. If you don't own a Bible at all, then take that one home with you. It's our gift to you. We set out last week on this new series through the book of Genesis that's going to take us some time. 50 chapters in the book, and we said that Genesis is really a book of beginnings. It's the beginning of the universe. It talks about the beginning of the earth, the beginning of mankind, the beginning of marriage and of family and of society, the beginning of God's people, and on and on and on. We could go with all of these beginnings, and as such, dealing with the beginning, it addresses so many hot-button topics that are discussed in our culture today, and we'll be touching on those as we go all throughout the book, because Genesis is the foundation of the Christian faith lived out, okay, the ethics of it, and so we'll even get into some of that today a little bit, but much more than that, the book of Genesis is the beginning of the overarching story, the overarching meta-narrative of the entire Bible, because the Bible is not 66 different stories, all right? It's not 66 different books about 66 different things. The Bible is one book about one story, the story of God, the story of redemption, the story of grace, the four-act story of creation, fall, redemption, and restoration. And Genesis is the beginning of that story, all right? Explicitly with creation and the fall of man in chapter 3. But then even everything else throughout the next 47 chapters is looking forward at that time to the coming redemption in Jesus Christ, foreshadowing and showing us types of what that would look like and a promise of a still to come today restoration of all things. Back to a better Eden, when Jesus comes again and makes right all that's gone wrong in the world. And so this grand overarching story centers in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ for the salvation of any who would believe. Right? It centers on the gospel, but that gospel finds its genesis, its beginning in Genesis. And so in our process through tracing through this story, last week we looked at creation. Just overall, big picture, looked at God's work of creation in general. And we summarized it, if you remember, for those of you who were here, with a statement. We said, God created everything out of nothing. It was good, and he did this for his own glory and pleasure. Okay, God created everything out of nothing. Ex nihilo, right? It was good. And he did this for his own glory and pleasure. That was last week. This morning, what I want to do is I want to dial into one piece of that creation in a bit more detail. And so to kind of set it up, I'll tell you, I'll do it like this. Every year, and I use this as an illustration all the time for those of you who are members here. Every year, a friend of mine, we go hiking on the Appalachian Trail. All right, this year, we've chosen not to go in February because we're tired of freezing. So we're going to go in April, right? A little bit smarter. Took us a couple years to wise up to that, but we figured it out. So we're going to go in April this year, and we'll be crossing in. We're just doing a section at a time. We'll be crossing into North Carolina this year, and probably next year get through Nantahala and Fontana up to the border of the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. On the other side of the park, 70 miles later, all right, then a little bit outside of that, about 20 miles north of the park, you get to what many people consider to be the crown jewel of the Appalachian Trail. It's something called Max Patch, and it is about 20 miles north of the Smoky Mountain National Park, and it's a mountain that's 4,600 feet in elevation that back in the early 1800s was cleared and is a pasture, and they've preserved it that way. And so you have 360-degree views for quite a distance. Just one of the, flip to the next one, one of the most beautiful places that you can imagine, the crown jewel of the Appalachian Trail. Off to the east, you can see Mount Mitchell and the Black Mountains around Asheville. You look south, you can see the Smoky Mountains. It dominates the sky. All right, but the point that I'm trying to make is this section is the crown jewel of the entire trail. Just as St. Peter's Basilica is the crown jewel of Rome. All right, and I'd love to be able to say, just as the Titans are the crown jewel of the NFL, but everybody knows that ain't true, right? More like the black sheep lately. I guess we'll find out who the crown jewel is tonight, right? Seahawks or the Patriots, cheaters. Sorry, Chris. We'll find out that tonight. But in all of God's creation, talking about this crown jewel, in all of God's creation, all right, God has a crown jewel. He has a crown jewel of his creation, something that is held up as the pinnacle of his creative act, something that he holds up as the pinnacle of his creative work. And when you start thinking about this, and we think through what we looked at last week with the creation of the universe and how we even dialed in and looked at that one picture of that one little section of the closest galaxy, major galaxy near us, 2.5 million light years away, the Andromeda Galaxy. We looked at one little section of one galaxy amongst 100 billion galaxies, all right? And in that one little section, there was over 100 million stars. And so in this one galaxy, the next closest one to us, they estimate there's over 100 trillion stars in that galaxy. And that's of hundreds of billions of galaxies, okay? Get the immensity of all this. And when I say hundreds of billions or 100 trillion stars, like stars are big, right? Like our sun's kind of a small one. Imagine the immensity of space. But even in the immensity of all that, that's just showing God's glory and his power. Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God, just showing all of his glory and power, even in the midst of all this mind-numbing eternity. In the midst of that, God singles out one thing. In all of that, that is his crowning jewel of creation. And it's mankind. It's humanity. Me and you. And this is crazy. And some people will look at that, hear me say that, and think, man, that is an arrogant claim. That is a ridiculous claim that if there was a God, people who are thinking through this, if there was a God, right, then how arrogant and really how ignorant is it to say that of all things, God would be most mindful of mankind? I mean, look at the vastness of space. That is an arrogant claim to make. And I feel that. But I would remind us of what Scripture repeatedly points out to us. And that's that God delights in the small and in the weak and in the fragile and in the needy. And there's not a whole lot more, not a whole lot smaller in the expanse of the universe, not a whole lot more fragile in the expanse of the universe, not a whole lot much weaker than what we see on planet Earth. One guy was talking about, he said, we just need a few degrees to change here or there, and our planet no longer exists. And so what we have here then is a personal creative force, a personal creative God who creates all things out of nothing, says that it's good, and he does this for his own glory and pleasure. So he creates space. He creates stars. He creates time. He creates mass. And in his crown jewel, he creates man. It's crazy, but it's true. Biblically, it's true. And so this morning, I want to show that to you. I want to show you how the Bible points, even in just Genesis 1, we'll try to stick right there, how Genesis 1 tells that to us. And then I want to try to tell you why that's the truth. And then we'll talk about some implications of that truth. And so, number one, if you're taking notes in your bulletin, we've already stated it, but man is God's crown jewel of creation. Okay, man is God's crown jewel of creation. Now, to be sure, everybody look right at me. God did not need to create us. God does not need anything. He wasn't lonely. He's got perfect love and fellowship amongst the members of the Trinity. He needed nothing. Did not need us. But he chose to create us. All right? Of his own good pleasure, for his own glory and pleasure, like we defined it last year, he chose to create us. And so for all the crown jewel of creation that man is, we need to remember this. We're creatures. We're not the creator. We have been created. And so that means that we are not the point. And we like to be the point, right? We try to make ourselves the point. That's why we're so easily offended if our dinner's late. That's why we get so mad if somebody cuts us off in traffic. Because I'm the most important person in the planet. I'm the most important person in the universe. People need to defer to my wants. That's how we want to live. We may not say it, but we just live it. We think we are the point. We're not the point. We are mere creatures. So we are not the point of the universe. And so even as we talk about the fact that man is God's crown jewel of creation, we need to remember that. We are a creature, not a creator. We're not the point. So I want to make sure that that's clear. He did not need us, but he chose for his own glory and pleasure to create us. And he chose to do so in a way that made us the crown jewel of his creation. And so let's look at Genesis 1 and how even in Genesis 1 we just see this marked off. If you pay attention to the words that you read, you'll see how this is marked off. And so we're going to go kind of fast through some verses. We'll start in verse 3 and we're going to go kind of fast. So I want you to try to stay with me and I'll show this to you. We're going to see a pattern develop. All right? So look at verse 3 with me real quick. And God said, let there be light. Verse 6. And God said, let there be an expanse. All right? Verse 9. And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together. Verse 11. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation. Verse 14. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse. Verse 20. And God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures. Verse 24. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures. And so do you see this pattern? We've got this pattern where it says, and God said, let there be this, or let this happen. Do you see that pattern that we're seeing here? Now look at verse 26. Then God said, let us make man in our image. That's a different thing. All of a sudden, he just switched to the first person. All of a sudden, he just switched to the personal. He didn't say, God, and God said, let there be man. He said, and God said, let us make man in our image. A completely different thing. It's different from the rest of the way things are described here in Genesis 1. Showing the central importance that the creation of man and woman is in God's economy. His crown jewel. Or you can look at the end of every day. At the end of every day, day one, day two, day three, day four, right? At the end of every day, he says, it's good, it's good, it's good. Even halfway through day six, he says, it's good. Then he makes man, and at the end of day six, now he says, it's very good. He's never said that before, but that is a new thing in this narrative. That's the first time he's done that. Up until now, it's always been good. Now humans are created, and it's very good. I'll show you another one, how it's marked off. Look at verse 20. Note the use of the word kinds, K-I-N-D. And God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves with which the waters swarm according to their kind. And every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas and let birds multiply on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning the fifth day. Verse 24. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds. Livestock and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds. and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God said, and God saw that it was good. And so everything, each living creature has been made according to its kind. But then verse 26. Then God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. He doesn't say according to their kind. He says according to my kind, according to my likeness. Let us make man according to my likeness, according to the likeness of God. That man's likeness is not shared merely with all other human beings according to its kind, but rather he shares a likeness with his own creator. And this is fundamentally the reason that we are God's crown jewel of creation. Not because we're awesome. Not because just in us we have some intrinsic worthiness, right? But because God is awesome and he has made us in his image. That's why we are God's crown jewel of creation. He has made us in his image. Get down to 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And so that's the why of your note number two. Man is God's crown jewel of creation because every human life has been made in the image of God. That's why. Because mankind has been made in the image of God. Now, I got to give you a term. Last week I gave you a term in Latin, ex nihilo, means out of nothing, right? As we talked about creation. Today I'm going to give you a new one. When we talk about the image of God, theologically the term for this is the Imago Dei. All right, the Imago Dei. And what this is that it's the image of God. What is the image of God? It's that God has put something in mankind that distinguishes us from all of creation. Something that separates us off as different from the rest of creation. As awesome as the rest of creation is, mankind alone has been created in the image of God. Mankind alone holds within it the Imago Dei. I mean, we just read 26. Then God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. 27 again. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And so humans, mankind, crown jewel of all of God's creation because we alone have been made in the image of God. What is that? What is the image of God? And there's all kinds of views around what this may be. Is it something physical? Is it something spiritual? So you've got all kinds of different views of what people think, but holistically, if you boil it down, the image of God, the Imago Dei that mankind alone has been created in, unlike any other piece of creation, is a relational, spiritual, like we have a relational, spiritual, intellectual, and moral component that the rest of creation lacks. Now, some of creation may have one of those, relational, right? Wolves run in packs, relational, and different ones may have different, some, but only mankind has all four of these, relational, spiritual, intellectual, and moral components. And so we are not a higher form of animal life. We're image bearers of, get this, the King of all kings. Who is man that God would be mindful of him? Yet he is. Crazy. And so value in us, again, is not inherent because of us, but because of who we represent. God has made us in his image, and he's put us here to be sort of his representative rule. Look at 27 again, we'll read 28 as well. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. He created them, 28, and God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion. over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And so he's given us dominion, okay, as his representative rule. And so like in ancient civilizations, when a kingdom took over another kingdom, a lot of times what they would do is they would build a statue of one king and place it in that conquered place so that they could see who their king was. All right, these were called icons. If you've seen Lord of the Rings, this is all through it. Like you've got the great big huge guys on the river holding up their hands, and there's statues always showing who the great kings of the lands were. That's what we are. We are the icons. We are to picture God for other people. We are to be his representative rulers here on earth. So let me try to give you some illustrations to bring this down a little bit. When I was a kid, I had a dog named Rex. I was talking with my parents about him earlier this week. They're here today. Rex was simultaneously the most brilliant and idiotic dog I have ever met in my life. He was a genius when it came to escaping. Like if we tried to put him in some sort of, you know, something to hold him, he would find a way out. All right? He was a genius at this. Yet he never learned his lesson with the road, right? He just roamed out there. He probably got tagged 3 or 4 times, had a little leg, he couldn't use it. But he was a happy dog, good dog. We gave him shots. We weren't that crazy with him, but he was a good dog, loyal dog, all right? Unbelievably loyal dog. Matter of fact, after he had lived a good long while, we went on a vacation one time, and he willed himself to stay alive till we got home. And then the next day he died. Like, he wanted to make sure that his family was okay. He willed himself to stay alive, and then he died the next day, or in that night. Awesome dog. Loyal dog. Dumb dog, but a great dog, right? But he was just a dog. He did not bear the image of God. Faithful as he was, Rex never prayed for me. All right? He did not have that spiritual component. And no matter how much rule he thought he had over Skyline Farm, God did not give Rex dominion over the world. That was given to mankind. And so I don't care what Dawn of the Planet of the Apes says, what Caesar says. Apes are never going to rule the world. All right? Animals are never going to have dominion over the world. It's not going to happen. We are God's representative rule. We are God's icons. We're fundamentally different from all the rest of creation. And deep down, we know this. Deep down, we know this. For example, some of you in this room this morning, before you came to this place, on your breakfast table, you had one of the greatest things on earth. I think it was created on the 8th day. And then on the 8th day, God made bacon. Right? It's a good thing. And one of our college students, Jordan Williams, put on Facebook this way. He said, BLT actually stands for bacon, a little more bacon, topped off with some bacon. That's what a BLT is. But bacon comes from a pig, okay? Like, I love telling my kids where things come from. Hey, you're eating a pig tonight. You're eating a cow tonight. You're eating a lamb tonight. Lamb chop. You're eating her tonight, okay? I like pointing at them, but I want them to get that. I want them to know that. But here's the deal. I can go kill a pig and eat the gloriousness of bacon and sausage, and only maybe PETA is going to bat an eye. But I can't go all Hannibal Lecter and kill and eat you, can I? That is a different deal. And we know this. We know this. Fundamentally, we know this. I'll give you another one. How many of you have ever had to put a pet down? Right? Not any fun. It is no fun to put a pet down. We've had to do it. You know, growing up, we had to do it. Dogs and cats. And no, we did not go Old Yeller on them and put a shotgun. We took him to the vet, or the vet came out if it was a horse. But it's no fun at all when you have to put a pet down. Not at all. But no one came to your house and arrested you, did they? But if you do that to a person, what happens? They're showing up, right? They're showing up. For millennia, we have understood this. We've understood this. But in today's culture of death, this backwards idea now, people are trying to get laws passed so that when your mom or dad get old and can't contribute to society, then they should just be axed and done away with. Because they're takers, they're not contributors to the GDP. So just get rid of them. That's their Nazi-esque, pit of hell, demon-inspired idea. And in Europe, there are already three countries where it is legal to euthanize your elderly parents. And not only that, euthanize any child who has a mental disability, physical disability, or anything like that. Completely legal to do this. Euthanize them, which is just a polite way of saying murder. And so bringing this home, they would say that my fourth daughter has no value to society, that she should be rid of. She doesn't contribute. And as followers of Christ, the reality is that no matter, let's just use her, if she could never walk, if she could never talk, if she could never say her ABCs, if she could never add 1 + 1, no matter what, if she was the most physically, mentally, emotionally disabled person to ever live on the planet, she would still have value and worth and dignity because she's made in the image of God. That's what this is about. It's not about functional contribution. It's about value because you have the imago Dei in you. You have been made in the image of God. And so that means then that every single human life, every single one, has value. From the unborn to the orphan to widows and the elderly to persons of disability, sex slaves and trafficked persons to the destitute and impoverished and starving, those struggling because of dirty water, illegal immigrants who may even service our lunch today, people of different religions, different races, even different sexualities that we may disagree with, every single human life is sacred because every single human life is made in the image of God. Every single one. That's why human life is sacred. God made us in His image. And so let's roll into some implications of this for followers of Christ. All right, I told you we'd be dealing with, you know, the grand overarching story. God created man. God created everything. He created man, His special crown jewel. And we'll extrapolate that story as we keep going forward. But now I want to dig down into some of the topics, hot button topics of today that are grounded in Genesis. And so we'll roll into the implications of the Imago Dei for followers of Christ. But before we get into the first one, I just want to talk about you for a minute. All right? One just practical thing that the Imago Dei means, all right? For one, it means that everyone in this room has worth and value and dignity and purpose. It means that you have worth and dignity and purpose and value. You do. Every single person in here. And so for those of us who maybe struggle with that sometimes, maybe struggle or bought into a lie that our life doesn't matter, you need to drink this down. When God created everything, out of nothing, it was good. And He did it for His own glory and pleasure. When He did that and He created crown jewel, He created mankind. You are made in the image of God. And not only did He do this globally, cosmically, He did this personally. He made you individually own purpose. I mean, Psalm 139, we'll read it here in a minute, but it just talks about the fact that before every day has ever happened, for all that, God purposefully, explicitly created personal you. So you think you don't have worth? You think you're a piece of trash? You think your life is not as worthy as the life of someone else? Listen to me. You have been made in the image of the Creator of the universe. The God of the universe has imprinted His image upon you. And you are valued because of that. You've been made in His image. And so tonight, as you drive home after the Super Bowl, right? Just go outside and think for a minute. If it's clear, look out. You can see Jupiter right now. You can see the Andromeda galaxy. It's going to be very faint with the naked eye, but you can see it. Even where there's light pollution, you can see it. And think about those things. And think about the mountains when you get there, or the Max patch that we looked at a minute ago. Think about the angels that God created, the cherubim and the seraphim and all of these things. Think about that. Be blown away by that. Be mesmerized by these glorious things. And then think about the fact that we are more like our Creator than anything else in all of creation. We are the culmination of God's infinitely wise and skillful work of creation. And again, not just cosmically, but personally. Psalm 139, it talks about God knitting you together. Not a whole lot of people knit anymore. Got the thread, got their whatever, but that's what God did. Like, personally, He's not like, I'm just going to throw some people over here and, I'm going to make, Ken Coker, I'm going to make him exactly this way, and I'm going to give him this talent and this ability, and I'm going to wire this into him, and I'm going to do all this, put my image on him and create him to glorify me on purpose. I'm going to wire all of this stuff into him. I'm intimately doing this. Like, some of us may have been a surprise to our parents, but you weren't a surprise to God. The Trinity never had an argument about when you should be born. Never surprised. On purpose. It says, verse 13, Psalm 31, For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. And so God has woven you intricately on purpose with everything you are for His glory. And your own good. It's made you in the image of God. Something that angels don't have, something that mountains don't have, something that stars don't have, something that Jupiter, we can see, doesn't have, something that the Andromeda galaxy doesn't have, something that Rex never had, only mankind has it. And so just really practically speaking, you've got to get that's why all people have value and worth and dignity, and why you do as well. You are not a piece of trash. You are not a surprise. You are not an accident. God purposefully made you for His glory in His image. Drink that down. Your life counts. It matters because God created you. This is true of you, and listen to me, this is true of every person on the planet. Every person. Regardless of any label that we might slap on them, every person on the planet has value, all right? Every life has worth and dignity. Every life counts. Every life is sacred because it's made in the image of God. Again, from the unborn, all right, to the orphan, to widows and the elderly, to persons of disability, sex slaves and trafficked people, Just going through this list again of the destitute and impoverished and starving who the only thing they can perhaps do is sell the only thing they have, themselves, their bodies. Those struggling to survive because their water is dirty. To illegal immigrants that, as Richard Land says, we hold up two signs, one that says keep out and another that says help wanted. All people of all time, of all races, of all religions, of all walks of life are made in the image of God. All of them. We have got to get this. And so any attack on the unborn or any image bearer, all right, to attack one, to hate one, image bearer, to mistreat an image bearer of God is to attack and hate and mistreat the very image of the Creator God. I mean, that's why in Genesis 9:6, that's the whole reason why he says don't kill, because he's been made in the image of God. And so assaulting or enslaving another human being is nothing more or less than an attempt to eliminate the reminder that we are created by and accountable to the one true God. Everyone is. These are implications of the Imago Dei. Life is sacred. And Scripture repeatedly calls those who can talk, who can speak, to speak up for those who can't. For example, Psalm 82, verse 3. Give justice to the weak and the fatherless. Maintain the right of the afflicted and the destitute. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. And so as believers, one of the implications of all this is that we wage war holistically, all right? And I use that in a loose way, holistically for the sanctity of life. Arguing, very important here, graciously. You won't want you graciously and persuasively with a biblically informed, consistent life ethic across all things as it relates to the sanctity of life, across all issues relating to the Imago Dei, a consistent life ethic. It values all life, not just one pigeonholed area over here, but all life. This is the implication of the Imago Dei. We don't pick and choose. I like the sanctity of life over here, but I don't like this one. That's why every year I kind of pick on what happens at the sanctity of life in MLK weekend. It's so predictable. People who want to combat abortion, by and large, are not as concerned about combating racism. And people who want to combat racism, by and large, are not as concerned at combating abortion. You can't pick and choose like that. It is a consistent life ethic. All life is sacred. All life is made in the image of God. And so the Bible presents the greatest platform for human rights on the face of the planet. There's not a better platform for human rights than the Bible. And so what we have to do as followers of Christ is we've got to take that platform and go to work as Christ's ambassadors, fighting graciously and persuasively for the sanctity of life. And so even tonight at the Super Bowl, which is one of the biggest nights of prostitution and trafficking, some years more so than others, some years it's not. But even tonight, it's kind of part of this. Most of you are going to be gathering with your community group, watching the Super Bowl or something like that. I want to ask you, on the back of your sermon guide, there's a whole list of some of these things, all of which relate to the Imago Dei, all of which relate to the sanctity of life. Either before your community group meets for the Super Bowl or at halftime or something like that, take the time to pray through these. And then talk about how can we as a group, what is one thing as this group, what is one thing that we can do to combat at least one of these areas? And every single one of those listed on that back page, Providence is involved with in some way, shape, or form. And so through what we already do at Providence, you have an opportunity to combat one of these. And your community group can say, hey, I'm gonna adopt this little piece right here, and we're going to go to work on this right here. So if you're not sure how that is, man, shoot us an email. You know, get at the Welcome Center. We'll get you hooked up. But the brass tacks is this. You are an image bearer of the King. And if you are a believer in Jesus Christ, now you are also a child of the King, adopted into His family in order to worship and enjoy God and lead others to do the same. And so, everybody needs to hear this. You have not been redeemed to spend yourself maximizing your comforts here on earth. Because you have eternal life there, you can spend your life here showing Christ's love while you've got a chance. This is an implication of the Imago Dei. May we care about God's crown jewel. Let's pray. Father, when we think about the fact that we have been made in the image of God, it is stunning. It is humbling. And it gives life to my soul. Father, for those of us in here who struggle with a sense of purpose, who struggle with value. May we not look to find our value in trying to somehow raise our self-esteem, but may we find our value centered and based upon the one who gave us life, the one who gave us breath, the one who stamped us with His image. And then as image bearers, as your icons, as your representative rule, may we live out the implications faithfully in all areas with a consistency. Help us, God. Our world is backwards. Help us to be salt and light. Doing good to those who may not even realize it's actually good. And help us to be humble and gracious. Never win anybody to Christ through an argument. But love will. Help us to be loving. In Christ's name.